of hope and of trust and of courage. But of course, not only are we here in the beauty of a church newly restored and now rededicated, but also in a harvest thanksgiving as we thank God for all that he gives to us on this earth, and as we recall our own responsibilities to the wider world. It is indeed a statement of trust and of hope that Woods Chapel should now be rededicated to God's glory and for the worship of the people. It is also, in a way, a time of commemoration. Think back to when this church was originally built, 1867. Because the Church of Ireland then had no grounds at all for any great confidence. The tides had gone whereby the Church of Ireland was given a tenth of the income of everybody, regardless of whether they were members of the Church of Ireland or not. The Church itself had been reorganized at central level with less and less financial support going out to parishes. The number of dioceses had been radically reduced during the 1830s. And in the 1860s, as against, for example, 50 years earlier, when the church was supposed to crudely flush with money, people in the Church of Ireland were becoming very insecure indeed. And it was becoming clearer and clearer as the 1860s went on that the Church of Ireland, which after all represented only 1/8 of the population of the island, was not going to remain in any privileged position. Indeed, it was not going to remain as a state church. And as some of you will know, in 1869, the church was disestablished, cast adrift by the government in Westminster to sink or swim as a voluntary body, relying entirely on the goodwill and the financial support of its members. It was a strange new world for the members of the Church of Ireland. And so as we look back at this time of rededication, at the original dedication of this church here at Woods Chapel, we're reminded that the people who built this church were very clearly people of great courage, people who were prepared to face into the future, just as in a way you and I this evening, as we rededicate the church, as we give thanks to God for what we have been given, are like those people 150 years ago called to face the future with courage and indeed in trust as well. The reality is that we're not living in 1867, but in 2017. We're living in a very different world. We're living in a society that has stopped thinking of Christianity or religion in any recognizable sense. Stopped thinking of Christianity as a normal position for normal people. That's the kind of world in which we live. And if you and I are to show any gratitude for the past, any gratitude for the work that has been done on this church, any gratitude indeed for the church itself, it can only surely be when we are prepared to be real about ourselves and real about our world. Disciples in every generation must bear the reality of the church. And let us again be honest. For many people, and not simply for a hard-hearted younger generation, for many people, the church is somehow answering questions that nobody is really asking. We've stopped looking at the very basic questions as to whether there might be real meaning to our existence on earth. And that's what people worry about. We've stopped looking at the question as to whether Christian belief might not simply be a hypocritical escape from an uncomfortable reality. And that is the question that people outside our walls are asking. So what men and women can very often see in the church from outside is very very often a rather self-satisfied institution, somehow wanting to survive above all else, and certainly not seeking the world for which Jesus Christ died, but rather its own survival. The great paradox is that only when a Christian community, whether here in Woods Chapel or anywhere, only when a Christian community can turn its face outwards, can it serve its existing members spiritually. And turning our face outwards, as we must do, means we need to look for and with those who are desperate in the middle of isolation and fear and loneliness, trying to find hope and love and direction and something other than the loneliness that so much is part of many people's lives. And as a recent study in the Sister Church of England discovered, people in general have not lost a sense of being spiritual. But if they don't find a real spirituality within a church community, they will go and look for it somewhere else, and sometimes find it in the most dangerous and bizarre of forms. So first of all, I believe that in the rededication of this church tonight, you and I have been called again to accept the reality of the church as it is. A church which in some ways seems to be placed in a world that is not really interested in it. And so we have to look forward into the future with trust in God, just as those who built this church in the 1860s lived in quite fearful times. They too have to look into the future and trust God for that future. But today is not simply a time of rededication. It is, as we know, also a harvest thanksgiving. And so for a couple of minutes, I want to try and draw together the idea of harvest thanksgiving into what we have been doing tonight with our rededication of this church. Now the harvest, although we tend to think of it as being a festival of the church that goes back for centuries and centuries, is actually quite a new development in the life of the Anglican Church. It's only 150, 200 years old. Before then, there weren't harvest thanksgivings. But the harvest thanksgiving was developed from the Jewish harvest thanksgiving. And just for a minute, I want to think about one of the features of that Jewish harvest. It was known and is still known as Sukkah, which is a Hebrew word meaning a little booth, and it's sometimes known as the Festival of Tabernacles. And it was celebrated throughout the Jewish world earlier this month. And what happens during the Festival of Booths, Sukkah, the harvest, is that many Orthodox Jews will make a little tent or a little hut in their garden, and they will spend the 7 days of the festival eating their meals there, living there, sleeping there. And they do this to remind themselves of the time of the Israelites in the desert, when for 40 years they lived in tents without proper homes, without roofs over their head. And of course we heard something of this in our reading from the book of Deuteronomy tonight. But why this is done is a symbol of trust in God. It's the conviction that God isn't just to be found in times of comfort and security, but God is the God also of the desert, the God of insecurity, the God of times that are not always good. God is there, if you like, to be worshipped and to be glorified by us in times of challenge as well as in times of plenty. And in Sukkot, the Festival of Booths, the Jews also remind themselves that our debt to God is not just for what we are getting from that. Our debt to God is for our very existence itself. And so as we come together that with that debt to God comes responsibilities. And indeed, in the book Deuteronomy, in another part of that book, the Jews were reminded that harvests are for everyone, not just for the fortunate few. And so there's that wonderful verse where the Lord says to his people, "You shall rejoice in your festival, you, your family, your servants." And then it goes on, "And the foreigners, and the orphans, and the widows." So in other words, it's not just for you, not just for me, but it's those who need our help. And any harvest that is just about our good fortune is really not a harvest worth having. The harvest festival reminds us, as at the beginning, that our task is to look outwards to the world, to care for a world that in many ways is suffering quite needlessly. Because yes, we have sufficient food in the world. We have means of communication and transport to bring food to areas of famine. We have an idea of what is, by the standards of the world, a very wealthy country indeed. We have technology to enable others to be self-sufficient in other countries. But of course, what we lack is the unselfishness to risk our standard of living so that other people can live at all. And so we all have so much to thank God for tonight. We thank God for our celebration of this truly beautiful, unusual church. A beautiful church physically, a church that has stood for generations. And indeed, we have to thank God for the courage and dedication of all of those who have served this parish over literally a century and a half. But we should also remember that as we celebrate in harvest, we should never take this church, we should never take a harvest, we should never take anything for granted. This festival of supper means that people are to remind themselves of their own vulnerability, their own need of God, the fact they do not deserve what God has given them, but must make themselves totally dependent on Him. And so for you and me tonight, yes, we thank God. We thank God from the bottom of our hearts for the beauty of this church, for the wonderful work of restoration that has been done to it, and the fact that it looks more beautiful perhaps than it's looked for many years. We thank God for the beauty of the church expressed in harvest. But above all, we thank God that He is there for us. Not only in the good times, but also in the bad times. That He's the God not only of peace and of hope, but He's the God also, as the children of Israel remind themselves, a God who is there in the rigors of the journey, in the uncertainties of the pilgrimage. And above all, we remind ourselves that because we've been given so much, we have also been given great responsibilities. Those are the responsibilities given to us